Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo! Come Gilardino!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by a suspiciously grinning Anthony. Awkward.
Sorry, I don't know why I'm laughing. I don't know. Ollie was making faces or something. You can follow me on Twitter at Twitter45, and of course we have Madison with us as well.
Yeah, third time recording is a charm. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, everyone doesn't get to see the outtakes there, but we struggle sometimes, you know. There's a few technical hitches and stuff. Speaking of technical hitches, I'm the only one who's actually bothered to wear a Milan shirt this time.
I don't need to prove it with my jersey. I have it tattooed on my body.
Yeah, same. I got mine right there.
Jersey tattooed on your body.
Correct. Oh, man.
And you've got the flag.
I got that too.
Pretty good, yeah. Yeah, we're all good. Mix it up a bit. We normally go straight into the game, but while we're on the subject of jerseys, we have released the 120th anniversary shirt. Officially, it was like leaked a few days ago by the usual places like Footy Headlines and stuff like that. It's basically like this season's home shirt, but with a hollowed out gold badge and then like mm-hmm. gold Puma logo and gold Emirates logo with the Fly Better underneath. It's got a couple of little features like the 120 and the years founded and 2019 on the back and stuff like that. I really like it. I bought one as soon as they were out on the store, purely because it's a limited edition. There's only 1,899 of them made. And I thought we're the kind of fan base that are just going to buy all those up ASAP, regardless of how the team's doing and that kind of thing. Adrian, what do you think? Do you like it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot, actually. I mean, like you said, it's this season's home kit already. They did the gold and a few other accents that you mentioned. There were other ones in the stripes on the red. And the black, it's got Kilpin's quote for why we picked the colors. You know, black like our enemy's fear, something like that, and red like fire. I don't remember what he said, but it's inscribed in the stripes, so pretty cool. I didn't like the pricing. I thought, you know, having the limited run was cool enough. You didn't need to charge 189.90 euros for that. It's a bit much for.
Oh no, they did, man. That's exactly what they had to do. Yeah, 18.99. Well,
for a shirt that everyone's already bought once this season, don't need to double the price and not be able to customize it, you know? So, I don't know. A little apprehensive, but I do like it. I think it'll look good. I'm excited to see us wear it.
I wonder how that'll work. I wonder if you really can't get a player's name on the back, because I assume we're going to wear this in a game. So,
yeah,
the players will have to have
a gold font or something, right?
If the option wasn't online, it's not going to be an option at all.
That's strange. I mean, not that you do it anyway, unless, I mean, for example, you know, you go for a player that's sentimental, someone that you think's going to stay here for a while, whatever. Some people might choose to retrospectively get like Ibrahimovic on the back if he is unveiled at the birthday party thing that they're doing. We'll come on to that later, no doubt. But he's not going to be playing in that game because obviously he won't be able to play until January. So I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one, but perhaps it's a blessing in disguise because literally every name I've got on the back of shirts in recent years has left. So
yeah, I thought that would be like at least a Legends run, you know, have like Kilpin be an option or Maldini or something.
Yeah.
I think that would have been cool. Nice way to signify it. Even a Berlusconi one just for LOLs, you know, but
what number? Yeah.
69, I don't know. Yeah. That's the only one I can think of.
Yonghong Lee.
Whatever 69. Year he got it. Yeah, that Twitter account.
Yeah. So yeah, Maddie, what do you think? Do you like it?
I like it. If I had 189 euros, I'd buy it, but I don't. So
yeah, that's like $250 for us plus $50 shipping. It's ridiculous. Because my regular home kit was about $200 after customization and shipping, so this one's just too much.
Yeah,
make it my size. It only comes up to a large, so
just got to slim down, man.
Yeah, got to slim down to buy a $200 jersey.
Yeah,
is that the 120th jersey they don't do in your size?
No,
They do it up to large. Is that it? I never noticed that when I bought mine because I'm a large, but like this is a large and it's not particularly giving. And the Puma shirt this year isn't particularly baggy either, but still should be okay. But I know, I never noticed that. Yeah, it's expensive. It's very expensive. And it's when you go to all the add-ons and you add the shipping in and stuff like that, all of a sudden it's like you think, well, $150 or whatever it might be to get the authentic version, and then you're adding an extra 50 on for shipping and customization and all that kind of stuff. It's a rip-off. I remember when you used to be able to get a shirt with the patches, maybe even a name and number, and it used to come to £50 max, so that's like, what, $65, $70, euros, whatever the conversion is, and now it's just a rip-off. A lot of people have been blaming Gazidis for the pricing of it, saying, like, this is completely his fault, and he's trying to raise money for the transfer window, which is brilliant. Mean, because if you do the maths, which I'm going to do, but go on.
The maths.
The company or the club doesn't get the full amount of money from that, obviously. Like, Puma gets some, Emirates gets some, I think, and I don't know. Obviously, that's a joke in jest, but we're not making a whole lot from less than 2,000 shirts total.
You make 358,000 euros, 721.10 is the answer. Okay, to that.
So
that does not. That sounds like way too much money for.
Well, it's a $200 shirt now.
Yeah, times by the production run, which is 1,899. It does add up.
Yeah. No, that makes
sense. I mean, you did the math, so the math.
The deal on loan, we get like, I don't know, what, 15% of that per sale?
I don't know. No, I think it's higher than that.
Are you sure? I thought it was less, honestly. I thought it was a really small percentage.
Isn't it Adidas, who have really bad margins? Like, clubs get like 10-12% depending on how big they are.
Very small, yeah.
Is that arguably fair? Because they don't have to pay. Like, Adidas pay and, you know, to sponsor the teams, to produce the kits for them and stuff. So I don't know. I don't really understand how football shirt economics work, but it's stuff like, you know, when they say a player like Pogba, when he signed for Man United, he paid for his own transfer fee or whatever in shirt sales. Mm-hmm. That's kind of mental to think about, but I also don't think it's actually true. I think there's an element of exaggeration. But
that is like hundreds of thousands of shirts.
But I believe it. For a player like that, though, like Ronaldo, probably Ibrahimovic, if he does get announced, like, well, that's going to sell so many kits for us. I'll buy one immediately. Mm-hmm. So I think that's obviously a smaller price than whatever United paid for Pogba, but I think it's realistic to think that some players could cover the cost of their transfer with jersey sales. It's a stretch, but I don't think it's unrealistic, depending on the player.
Yeah, definitely. I can't remember. How much was Pogba's transfer fee? It was 89 million, right?
89 million pounds, yeah. So it was like 108.
So if you say it's like £80 a shirt now, they'd have to sell just over a million shirts to break even on his transfer fee, which is quite a lot, but when you consider global sales and stuff, I'm sure there's that many Messi jerseys get sold and stuff that. So it wouldn't massively surprise me.
And a club the size of United with as many fans as they have, both real and fake, you know?
And I also think this is like, you know, when you were referring to the Ibrahimovic thing, fan bases that have been tortured in recent years have not had a whole lot of success. This is the kind of thing that they get to brag about. Rather than buying a new shirt with the, you know, the Champions League winners thing on, or even the Coppa Italia winners. But we don't get that. We just get whoever the big player is at the time, which is kind of sad in a way. I've seen with the Ballon d'Or thing as well, a few people saying, you know, how far we've fallen that we don't even have a player in the top 50 anymore.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
Well, and someone else made a point, which I thought was actually pretty interesting, especially given how much we've kind of shit on him recently. But if we were playing in Champions League, Piontek would have been in the top 10 just off goals alone.
Is that right?
I mean, I think so. If you look at the goal, like, obviously, I don't know how people would vote. But off goals alone,
I don't know. It depends on how well he did in the Champions League.
Right.
Yeah, probably. And if there was a trophy.
It's just so interesting how important the Champions League weighs into an event like that. And then how much better Messi is to not win it consistently and still be held that much higher than everyone else. I think that's crazy, too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe some of the rankings. Appreciate we're going off course a little bit here, but Raheem Sterling, you would all probably say, has been a much better player through the calendar year than Riyad Mahrez. But because Riyad Mahrez won the African Cup of Nations with Algeria, and I think he scored the winning goal in the final. I could be wrong on that. But he certainly scored a couple of crucial goals for him. He got 10th and Raheem Sterling was 14th.
Yeah, but Ronaldo won the Euros. Then he won the UEFA Nations League. He won Serie A and he wasn't even close to winning.
He was third, right?
Oh, third. Either way, he won more than
I think it's just ridiculous, the PR machine behind him, that he won Serie A's best player in May. May 31st it was announced. And then he gets presented it today, knowing that he's not getting Ballon d'Or, just so it still shows him winning a fucking award today.
Did you see
the way that it was, that it all happened, though? Like, he didn't show up to the event was in Milan.
Yeah.
He didn't show up to it. He waited.
Oh, he didn't show up to it either. He waited to see if he'd win Ballon d'Or or not?
No, he waited. Well, I guess he'd been informed because Messi was there with his whole family, his kids and stuff. So, whereas before, when he didn't win it, it was just him there. Yeah. So I think they get informed a little bit before, to be honest, and just have to keep it under wraps. But Ronaldo waited until the award was actually announced, hopped out of a car. His bodyguards were all around him, shining torches into the cameras so it couldn't pick anything up. This is what Tancredi Palmieri is saying, he's there. So. And then he went and got his award and then went again.
Wow, interesting.
Mental. It's an interesting way to respect the league.
I wish they wouldn't give them a heads up, you know? I want to see some disappointment on some faces. I want to see a shock. Like, they were competing for, both of them were competing for their sixth Ballon d'Or, a world record. Like, I mean, realistically, Ronaldo's never winning another one again, just given his age, his decline already, and Messi obviously hasn't.
I don't think Messi is either. I think this is Messi's
last. Got a much better chance.
I think Messi could win another, but I wouldn't be shocked if this is kind of the end of them.
I think the player to break the dominance is going to be Mbappe.
I could see that for
sure. I see break the dominance. Obviously, it's Modric in there as well, but since
Mbappe has to leave PSG.
I mean, does he? Because he got
PSG's not winning,
right? No, he got sixth.
Winning any Champions Leagues.
If PSG, Mbappe went to Real Madrid, I think he'd be an absolute shoo-in to win it, to be honest.
Yeah.
They love the Galacticos thing as well, without a doubt. Like, you know.
Which also is just ridiculous and unfair that the club you play for gets biased, you know. PSG is just as good of a club as Madrid is right now, if not better, just based off performance lately. But, I mean, the media is always going to go for Madrid.
Milan.
What team are we supposed to talk about here?
Can't remember. We'll talk about it then. Because actually, you know, we normally start off talking about a defeat or a draw, but we actually won a game on Sunday evening. It wasn't easy. I mean, I think both me and you, AJ, said that we would win without conceding. You said 2-0,
I said 2-0
easy.
Yeah.
Maddie, you said, I think, you said
I
we
said
win
2-1 and they were going to score first.
Yeah. And I think I said I might have got that one right. I think I might have said a narrow 1-0 win. But either way, we got the win. And that was nice. And it was a good performance. It was, you know, we were talking last week about how we're building week on week and we're seeing the players start to understand each other a lot more. We're starting to see a lot more just on and off the ball organization. Still lacking that killer instinct, and that's why it took until the 88th minute to break the deadlock, but you've got to be happy with a win on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we kind of touched on it last week. We've been getting better and better with each game. I was supremely confident coming into this one, and I still think we're going to win both the next two games as well, but just you look at our performance, our possession was better than Juventus, was better than Napoli, and this time out we had 66% of the possession. We had 27 shots. To say we didn't deserve to win 2-0 or 3-0 is, you know, you could argue that because our shooting wasn't the best, but the chances were there. I always forget this keeper's name from Parma, but
Luigi Sepe.
Yeah, Sepe. He, of course, made some great saves. I think he had like 7 saves or something like that, and you know, there were opportunities where a lot of our players could have scored multiple times. Suso had one that just barely went wide. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Teo had his tap-in, but I think there was a few. And, you know, tap-in's a little rush. It is a tap-in, but it was a really good goal on top of that
he
as well.
He put some curve on that ball. It wasn't a tap. He actually aimed that shot.
First time shot is what I should say then.
Yeah.
Because it was like deflected boot. And then he just kind of like boop. Yeah, but there was opportunities from a lot of players. Regardless, we won. I'm happy. 3 points. We're moving up. We're almost to the top half of the table, boys.
Almost there.
Yeah.
I think we're level on points with Torino, who were in 10th, and that's top half, isn't it? So,
I think that
result didn't do great, but
we just need a goal scorer. Mm. That's the only thing that's holding us back, because granted, Parma is not the strongest team, but we controlled the game. They maybe scared us once or twice on defense, and Donnarumma came up big both those times. One of them was offsides, and Donnarumma still amazing save coming off the line. And Piątek just is not connecting. He's missing something. He is extremely unconfident, or he's just a very selfish player and is just trying to get the goal for himself instead of having a team win.
Yeah, I actually thought Piątek in the first 15 minutes was everything that you want him to be if he's not scoring goals. I thought his hold-up play was pretty good. He had that one where he ran in behind, and without really looking, he played a perfect pull ball back to Calhanoglu, who was just inside the area, and he hit it first time wide. But you think if we have an actual left winger playing there, or somebody who knows how to strike a ball with confidence into the far corner, someone with a bit more composure who's not going to snatch at that effort, then we go 1-0 up early on and it's probably a completely different game because we're able to dominate it without necessarily being desperate to score. And that makes
and chase
a big
the
difference.
Goal, yeah.
You know, when we scored going into that game 12 in the first 13 rounds of the season, it's obviously weighing very hard on the players. And you could see that they were snatching opportunities. Whenever we got a little bit of space 25 yards out, we were shooting on sight. And most of the time it was straight at Sepe. He didn't really have a difficult afternoon. I mean, there's people who argue, and I'm not going to get into this whole sabermetrics debate, that rather than shots on target and total shots, the expected goals stat is probably the one that you need to look at. And we were, I think our XG for that game was 0.99. So it shows that we got the one goal that we probably just about deserved on the balance of play. And granted, it did come from a shot from distance that was parried and a lucky ricochet, but an absolutely expert finish from Gareth Bale. I mean, Teo Hernandez.
I was like, where is he going with this?
Yeah, I can't remember who it was who said it, but I read an article earlier saying, Teo Hernandez is playing really well for Milan. Remember how Gareth Bale started when he was at Spurs?
Yeah,
left back, he also played left back. But yeah, I think it was our best performance of the season in terms of the way that the players were linking up in midfield. The 1-2 passing, the triangles that we managed to do was all fantastic. Highlighting a couple of players in particular, we talked about, obviously, Teo Hernandez aside, because that guy's the next Roberto Carlos or Gareth Bale or whatever. Andrea Conte, again, was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I thought he looked better defensively in this last game than his last two outings. And he looked great in both of those as well. Conte is definitely finding his stride again. He's getting back to his old form. And I couldn't be happier. You know, it's exactly what we expected when we signed him. This summer that we signed him right prior, he won the award for best defender in Serie A. And it was deserved that season. And we really expected to see that continuing. Obviously, injury set him back. But here we are now, and he's starting to get that again. I do feel bad for Calabria because he's going to be a bench player moving forward unless something happens. But given their form, it makes sense. I know, Ollie, you're a big fan of Calabria, and we all are, but I think for the rest of the season, if form continues, there's just no chance we don't see Conte starting over him.
Yeah, I think he's more comfortable staying back and defending than pushing forward and supporting Suso in the attack. And I think that it just suits him much better, even though he's got a pair of wheels on him. But He's been playing great defensive football.
We don't know if he does have those wheels on him really anymore. I guess that's part of the problem and having those injuries that happen to you, perhaps. And this is one of the things that he said in his interview. I think it was after his first start back under Pioli. He said that he's been told by Pioli a lot to work on his defensive game, and he was really happy to do that. So whether he thought that wasn't his strong point before and he's now starting to sort of reinvent himself as a player because perhaps he can't bomb up and down the wing anymore like he used to do because he's had his knee reconstructed twice, or, you know what I mean? We had doubts. When he arrived, we signed him as a wing back, thinking that he would play as a wing back because mm-hmm. he can't really... like Teo, we still consider to be a wing back because fantastic going forward, provides that energy in the final third and can score goals. Perhaps a little bit suspect at the back and struggles for positioning. We probably all thought that's exactly the player we were getting with Conte as well when we signed him. But like I say, I think a combination of factors have led to Conte looking pretty comfortable playing as just an out-and-out fullback. And the way that he tucks in defensively, the way that he, you know, as we've mentioned many times before, he keeps starting that back three. He knows when to push up a little bit and when to overlap. I kind of owe him an apology because even after those two solid starts that he had against Juve and Napoli, I wasn't going to write him off, but I still thought that Calabria was the answer moving forward and that Conte would have a bad game. I think those are three tough tests that he's had, and he's come out with shining flying colours in all of them. So
One of the things that's really helped him with this form, and sorry to cut you off there, is just a Pioli system. One thing I've noticed is he's kind of, and you know, this is going to be a big comparison, but it's something he's doing that's the same. He plays his fullbacks the same way Mourinho does. He plays with that one attacking fullback and one defensive, and mm-hmm. it's giving both mm-hmm. Teo the opportunity to excel at what he does best, and it's giving Conte the opportunity to excel at what he does best. And you're right, we expected him to be a wingback when we signed him, but he's turned into just this pure right back, and he's doing fantastic. I mean, I have no negatives to say, and I usually could find three or four about all of them, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people say it was his best display in a Milan shirt in general, and I think it's probably correct. But I find it amazing as well that Calabria was probably considered the more natural fullback and Conte was the wingback. But what we've seen, if anything, perhaps over the last 12 months as evidence, is that Calabria is better at, you know, those that end product in the final third, the crossing and the, you know, the link-up play with Suso. Obviously, he's got a lot of chemistry with Suso because they've played together for mm-hmm. feels like a while now. But, yeah, and Conte's the one who seems to now have the better defensive capabilities. So it's kind of interesting how opinions and perceptions flip themselves. But there's nothing that can be flipped about Ismail Benacer. That guy is just an absolute beast.
I will say, during the Parma game, midway through the second half, around like the 65th, 70th minute area, I noticed he got the ball four times, and all four times he made a little dribble, looked forward, and then turned around and passed it back to Romagnoli. Mm. And that was everyone's biggest complaint about Bilia, was that it was just back pass after back pass after back pass. And obviously Benacer is not doing only that, but I did get a little worried, and mainly I was anxious because we hadn't scored at this point. But that was an observation I made.
Yeah, but if in his defense is if you don't want him to make a useless pass forward and you don't want him to dribble forward and then lose the ball.
And I agree. So
that's something that Biglia never did. Mm-hmm. And Benacer is normally doing that. So I think a couple back passes is not a negative thing. But, I mean, we have a little bit of PTSD here. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it was. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, here we go again. It's happening. But you're right. He always looks for that forward pass first. And he makes a smart move, whether that is, you know, you got to resort to the back pass mm-hmm. or you could find that open player up front. But I don't know. I was just getting nervous because we had this incredible possession, but we weren't really doing anything with it in that middle stretch of the second half. It wasn't until really probably like the 80th minute or so when we kind of just woke up again and were onslaught after onslaught. And then finally we got the goal to win it. But yeah, man, how about that celebration though? Ripping his shirt off, going straight to the
I think
wall
he's suspended
there.
Next week, right?
No.
I read that he was.
I doubt there's any way he's racked up five yellow cards.
I don't know. I feel like he might be. He's got three or four at least.
I don't remember seeing anything about him being suspended, but I could be wrong on that. They reset anyway in, what are we on now? It'll be 15 rounds.
Yeah, it's due week 15, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not long until it resets, I guess, but but yeah, no, it was an incredible celebration. Really good moment for him. He's now our joint top scorer, which I don't know whether we should be encouraged by that or whether we should just feel absolutely
nervous.
Horrific about it.
I would argue that he is our top goal scorer. I mean, obviously he's
open
tight,
play,
but yeah, all his are open play. Two-thirds of Piontek's are penalties. So
He's got four yellow cards. So
okay, so he's one away.
Yeah.
Right. He got a yellow for taking his shirt off, I assume. even though he wasn't shirtless underneath. You still get a yellow for that, I think, don't you?
Yeah.
It's he also has three goals in the last eight games.
Yeah.
Man, that's actually quite prolific. That is winger that sort is. Of level production. It is. And it shows how flex... Wow.
Would you guys start him as a winger next week since it's against Bologna and then Ricardo Rodriguez as the defender?
I wouldn't only because I feel like Ricardo doing that would hurt our left back position more so than it would help our winger position, I think.
Okay.
I don't think you fix what isn't broken. I think that left side, Teo functions good in that position. And honestly, the only thing I would change is actually put a proper winger in there and not play Calhanoglu there again because I just don't think it works.
I'd put
Bonaventura there. Out there.
Yeah, the other thing with Teo there is the winger, Bonaventura or Calhanoglu, know what's going to happen. They know where he's going to be. They trust him, and that gives them the opportunity to get to the top of the box so he could make a great cross or a pass or whatever it is. So I think the chemistry's there. I wouldn't mess with it. I'd like to see him play winger like you said, in a game against a lower-level opponent, but I think we dug too deep a hole that we got to get out of it and then climb up a ladder, and then we could start messing around. But
Now,
let's just keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah, we just need to be good enough in the short term to get a bit of respectability back, and then I guess you start fine-tuning. One thing I didn't notice, and I've not exactly been his biggest praiser, to be honest, but I think it was fairly evident exactly what we miss when Paqueta's not in the team. I was going to say on Bennacer, you could even tell that Bennacer wasn't as familiar not having Paqueta there next to him because he felt like he didn't have anyone to pass to. And that's when I think you started to see the backwards passes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
you've got Paqueta, when Kessie and them came in.
That's exactly what I told you when you went on your rant against him. I said he's always putting himself in a position to receive a pass. He's like, his football knowledge is unreal, but he loses the ball quite a bit. But we did miss his creative play and his knowledge to be in an open spot to receive a pass.
It's like having Bennacer at the base of the midfield is fantastic because we know what his strengths are. His strengths are being basically like a tiny little warrior that you can't shake away, and he's going to recover a lot of balls, like you, Maddie. He's going to recover a lot of balls, and but then also he's probably not going to be the guy, or certainly not yet, because he's still young, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be the guy who then takes the ball through the thirds once he wins it back. But if he's got a guy who's over to his right-hand side in Paqueta, who he does dribble the ball well through the thirds. That's never been my argument. My argument has always been that we've paid 35 million euros for a guy who tends to just whack a pass at the back of Piontek's foot or whatever. His decision making isn't quite there. It could, you're about to argue. Yeah, it could be Piontek's fault as well. Perhaps they're just not linking up. But you could see the difference. I just don't think Kessie could sit anymore. And I was really relieved to see him substitute for Krunic. Krunic came on and looked like twice the player Kessie had been. One of the things Kessie always had going for him was that he was so physical in the midfield. Him and Bakayoko, when they played together, did actually look like a really good pairing because nothing got past us. There was no midfield that dominated us when those two were playing. However, you realise that, once we have Bennacer there, who's kind of doing the job of two people because he's so energetic, Kessié doesn't actually really bring a lot to the table at all. All right, he takes a good penalty, but, he's just a stat padder, isn't he, at the end of the day in that sense. So I think Krunic is probably the man going forward, but I also think if there's anything that's been highlighted, it's probably a box-to-box midfielder could be, the area to strengthen in January if we're going to go for something.
I cannot wait for Bennacer to score his first screamer goal.
I think that's how it'll be, too.
Just from outside of the box, he's just going to run up and just rip it.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
I can see it 100%. Top right corner.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to get too ahead of myself.
Yeah. So we got a good question here as well, just on the game. Joseph Calvo asks, Pioli's system's creating chances for our strikers, but they're not taking the opportunities. What's one change that you would make to get Piontek or Leao firing? We created a lot of opportunities. As we've said, we got a lot of shots on target. You could argue that a lot of those weren't massive chances, but go on, what's your solution?
Before you say your solution, how many shots did Piontek have? The team had a lot. How many did Piontek have?
That's a good question.
Let me quickly look it up while he answers.
Yeah, you look it up. So my solution is not to get Piontek or Liao firing. It's to get them replaced with Ibrahimovic, who will never stop firing. And, December 15th, he'll be on the team. So
my goal to get them firing is to play Liao instead of Piontek and give Piontek a bucket of water to fill up some water bottles.
Wow.
Make him the water boy. Oh, man. You know, as soon as he took the 9, I knew it was game over, honestly.
That was... I'm just looking here. I always go to who scored for stats now. I'm just looking here at the how many shots did he have? One.
He only had one shot. Even I'm shocked by that. I know he's been god awful.
Four. Sorry, he had four and none of them were on target. At the ratings of our team for that game, Donnarumma 6.65, Hernandez and Conte both got 8, Bonaventura 7.5, Benacer 7.8, Suso 7.8, Musacho 7.3. So, like, all pretty good, above average ratings. Piontek 6.1.
Yeah. I gave him a 5.
You gave him a 4, and I didn't think that it was... I didn't think it was harsh, honestly.
Yeah.
He was so out of the game. How many times have I said in the last few weeks, actually, it's kind of like... Everyone says about his link-up play, and if he's not scoring, then he's going to be doing it. It is kind of like playing with a ghost up front. Mm-hmm. He genuinely just drifts out of games, and I don't think it's his attitude anymore. I think it's just a feeling of hopelessness. He knows he's kind of losing everyone already. I think he probably knows as well that we're trying to replace him. So it seems to be heading...
Yeah, hearing rumors of a 38-year-old coming in to take your spot cannot help your confidence.
We just got man of the match for us. Can you see
that? Çalhanoğlu. Yeah. Dude, his passes were awful. I mean, I don't know how he got an 8-2. He was fine on the ball, but all his passes were short and slow. Everyone had to drop back. There were a few breakaways that I honestly think one went to Piontek, and he could have been in on goal, but the ball stopped rolling a couple feet behind Piontek's feet, and it was nuts.
I think that with who scored, you get big boosts for shots on target. And Çalhanoğlu did definitely have a couple of shots on target, one from distance and one, the one that he messed up, where he tried to cut back one too many times and in the end slipped and sent a really weak effort. That was towards the end of the game.
There was one that hit someone's hand that went out for a goal kick that should have... Well, I don't know. You could argue his hand was in natural position, but you also see his... arms like that. Like, they're in a normal
That's
spot,
a great
but
shot.
Straight out, yeah. And
Mussolini salute.
That's the YouTube thumbnail.
I don't know how they got to that conclusion, but yeah. In answer to the original question, I have more faith in getting Liao firing, and I think that a potential way of doing that straight off the bat would be to look at playing with two up front. But that's not the way that Pioli wants to play. And then you could argue, do you throw your entire system out of the window just to appease one player's arrival? Do you then shift Liao out to playing, on a wing and bench Çalhanoğlu? I don't know. Thankfully, we don't have to solve this dilemma. I think both Piontek and Liao are so low on confidence that with Piontek, I would say it's almost at the point of no return now, but watch me say that and he goes on loan to Sampdoria and scores, well, probably wouldn't be Sampdoria, but goes on loan wherever and scores 15 goals between now and the end of the season. Don't know, he could be a pure confidence player, but...
I would love for that to happen and then his value go up and then we could sell him in the summer.
I was about to say, sell him for more.
Cash in.
We got a good question from the AC Milan Swedish podcast. They asked, if Zlatan arrives, would you consider changing formation? I kind of alluded to it there, but is that when we see a two up top? Or maybe
I was just going to say, I think Zlatan and Liao would be a force to be reckoned with. I mean, we all know Zlatan makes every player look better around him, and Liao's got the footwork. He could dribble around people. Obviously, Zlatan's got the muscle and the footwork as well, but that link-up would be massive.
Mm. Imagine Liao and Ibra up top with Paqueta behind him.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
I like that.
Sounds amazing.
Just the idea of Leao running off, like running in behind, and Ibra winning the flick-ons or the knockdowns to Paqueta, who, you know, we all know that he would like to get a bit more offensive production. I think that would certainly work. And then you can kind of balance out the midfield, almost like a 4-4-2 diamond. You still have Bennacer where he is, but, you know, you can have Bonaventura who can push up. He's happy to play box-to-box. Then you can either add a bit of muscle by playing Kessié still or playing Krunic. I don't know. It seems to make a lot of sense doing that, to be honest.
The only one who gets left out is Suso. And I don't think it'd be fair to bench him.
Can you play him as a right mid?
You could try, but I feel like that leaves the midfield too open. I mean, Bennacer would have to cover basically for three people. If you did like like you said, a 4-4-2 diamond, have Suso's that right mid, Bennacer obviously the deep lane, and I don't know if I'd go with Bonaventura, who could get forward and be creative, or if I'd go with a guy like Krunic. I would keep Paqueta as the attacking mid still.
No, but if you're doing a 4-4-2, you have Leao
with
the
diamond
in the middle.
Right.
Okay.
But with the diamond, yeah.
What about... I'm just thinking here. What about selling Sousa? Sacrifice him because he's been good. You know, we know that he's good on the ball. He does look like our most technically gifted player still, and the one that's going to make stuff happen when the rest of the team aren't really making anything happen. What about sacrificing him, getting the 30-35 mil that we might get for him, and spending that on a really good box to box midfielder and committing to the switch and just going with the 4-4-2 diamond and having Rakitic or someone in there?
What if we did 4-2-3-1 with like three attacking midfielders, and then have Leao as one of them. Ibra the top guy.
Yeah, I've persistently campaigned for us to use the 4-2-3-1.
That's my
favorite
formation.
It's the double pivot thing again, and it's like who are you putting next to Bennacer? Yep. The answer honestly.
Well,
Bilia.
That would be no. That would be when you go in for a Rakitic or a Modric, like you're saying. You'd sell Suso, and then you would have Leao, Paqueta, and like Bonaventura in the three attacking mids.
But 4-2-3-1 means that you're not playing two up front, so that kind of negates the whole thing.
We just have Leao as an attacking mid, because he's going to be moving around more anyways, and then Ibra's just the target man.
That could work.
It probably wouldn't work.
It's like a 4-4-1-1. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't think it changes. I don't think it changes, and I think that the way that the team functions, the more and more I'm seeing it, I see why he likes having Çalhanoğlu in that position. It's because he sort of ends up tucking in behind, and then Suso's allowed to drift out right, and then Hernandez comes up on the left side, which almost makes like a front four diamond. Mm-hmm. But I don't like it because Çalhanoğlu's so wasteful, and I really don't think that that's going to change anytime soon. So, yeah, get rid of him. I'd sell him in a heartbeat over Suso or someone like that, but I don't think that's going to happen either. The coach clearly sees something in him, otherwise we'd have seen someone else shifted into that position. Be interesting to see, though, if Paqueta does come back for the game against Bologna, which we'll come on to in a second, whether he just drops Çalhanoğlu, makes Bonaventura a winger again, and drops Paqueta back into the midfield.
Is then Paqueta rejected to come back? I know
he's back training tomorrow, so he'll be fit.
Yeah,
for
I didn't think it was a very big injury. I thought it was like a slight knock or something.
Yeah, just muscle discomfort.
I wouldn't be shocked if he starts from the bench, though. I could see that.
Possibly, yeah.
I hope not.
No, me neither. Well, I think if we do see that, Bonaventura on the left, Paqueta in the midfield, and Bennacer in there, and then, you know, I guess you stick with Suso on the right and probably Leao up front, or he'll probably again end up going with Piontek just from a stylistic point of view. Seems to like starting with him and bringing Leao off the bench. Then you're getting close to what I would consider to be, with this current squad, our strongest 11, which is weird because we probably thought it'd be completely different at the start of the season, but I guess that's the way that form dictates these kind of things. So we've got Bologna on Sunday. I don't know where they are in the league.
They're well above us. No, they're not. I'm thinking of Cagliari. No, Bologna's below us. I think they're one below us, 1 point less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 16 points from 14 games. We are, interestingly, currently 3 points behind Napoli, who were in seventh. So things are looking up in that respect. We're 1 point.
Beat them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a good result for them. Can't really argue with that. But yeah, Bologna coached by Sinisa Mihajlovic, of course, who, you know, it's good to see that he's still in and around, you know, the training setup and stuff like that. He did his first press conference back. It appears, touch wood, that the treatment's going well and everything like that. So obviously we wish him the best, but don't want him getting 3 points against us on Sunday.
Yeah, we don't need any nice fairy tales.
Yeah, especially since he's decided that he wants to play the emotional card on bringing Ibrahimovic back.
Yeah.
Becomes it'll be for me and stuff like that, which is, you know, fair enough. It might end up working. And yeah, I don't know.
He said something.
Got asked about Ibrahimovic and said, yeah, I've spoken to him. If he comes to Bologna, then it'll be for me, basically. I thought, I'm not sure. Yes, it will, because obviously they have a friendship and stuff like that. But I feel like it's kind of also discrediting the whole Bologna project and what they're trying to do. But
Yeah, I get what you're saying. That's
moving away from that. It's another game away from home, and they don't seem to be easy, or at least they haven't been this season. We won every game away from home, 1-0, I think we...
Yeah, but this one we're winning 2-1.
Oh.
I like it.
That's your
magic. Like I said, we're going 9 points.
I was going to say 2-0.
I really haven't given this game much thought. I feel like I should pick a win again because it worked, but...
It hasn't worked for me all season.
Do you know what? We're going to score 3 this game. We're going to win 3-1, and it's going to be an exciting game to...
I honestly think that we just need a big game or a big win to just change our pace.
I think we need an early goal. Like, the moment that we finally hit one of those shots right in the first 20 minutes... Mm-hmm. It just eases the pressure and it allows us to play much more naturally. We've seen it so often this season already.
For me personally, I get stressed out if there's no goals after 20 minutes. Like, that's when it starts to sink in. I'm like, what if we don't score anything, you know? And yeah, then it just gets more anxious and anxious. And then, like, this last game out against Parma, I was getting pretty pissed off going into the 80th minute there. And then I started dancing like a fool when we finally took the lead. But
I was pretty happy. I was also kind of mad. I was like, is this what it takes? We need Theo to score, or Teo?
We need Teo to score off of basically a, not a goalkeeper error, but, you know, a deflection when he could have just caught it or something, you know? So, I don't know. I think Bologna is obviously in good form. They just beat Napoli, a team we couldn't finish off ourselves. A team we should have finished off, but didn't. And I think we've still improved. But I'm going to continue with, I think Bonaventura scores a goal, and I think Sousa's going to get one. And then I think it's going to be a Musacchio own goal.
Wow. Yeah, I don't really know. I hadn't thought about scorers.
And that's the goals.
Yeah, probably none of our strikers are scoring. I like the...
Leao's going to score. I think Leao's going to start. He's going to score.
That'd be nice.
Romagnoli's going to score off a set piece.
I take it.
And Bonaventura is going to score.
I'll take it. Like you said, Musacchio's going to score for us from a set piece. Nah, don't want that. I'd rather not score. I think Bonaventura scores, Suso scores a free kick, and we get an own goal. Just gut in it, you know? Because one of these episodes, you know that it's going to happen exactly how we call it. And we won't even remember. I'm sure I said that. We'll see how we get on in Bologna. It's one place that I do actually really, really want to go. There's a few away games that I want to tick off. I'm not going to get to do it this year, but hopefully next season. It's like a beautiful city. A friend of mine's there at the moment. Like, the Instagram photos makes it look like such a gorgeous place to be. And the stadium's amazing. It's like a castle. So I really want to tick that off. I kind of want to do Verona as well for the city thing, do Genoa, do one of the Turin games, just a few games like that.
I just want to go to Milan.
I can't remember. I drove through Bologna, but I don't remember anything about the city at all. Verona is incredible, though. I do like that city. That's a nice city.
Just a shame that AS Verona are a bunch of racists. We got another question here. Just move on from the game. Well, they don't have a great track record. Christian Espinoza asks, describe your... We're getting close to it now anyway. It's a month away officially until it opens. The big rumour at the moment is obviously Ibrahimovic. There's occasional stuff still about Rakitic, stuff about Demiral, Rugani, and then Everton Suarez thing came back again today. Some reports in Brazil saying that we had a scout present at their game on Sunday night, which they won 3-0.
Max tweeted about that, right?
Correct, yes. Yes, I think the source was Jan Agerfjortoft. Oh, that was genius. So those are the links, basically. But I get the feeling with this Mercato, because there's so much, apart from Zlatan, that's concrete, that we're kind of working under wraps a little bit here. Mm-hmm. And that we might be surprised about a couple of the names that come up nearer to the start of the window. But Christian Espinosa asks, anyway, describe your perfect January window for Milan. He says his is to get Zlatan, to buy Sandro Tonali, and to buy or loan Vinicius Jr., the guy from Real Madrid, and to sell three of our deadweight players.
I think getting Tonali is just way too ambitious. There's no way that it's going to happen at all. Ibra for sure. I don't know how you guys are going to feel about this. Switch Çalhanoğlu for De La Feu.
Absolutely fine. Switch is in swap deal.
Yes.
Sell one by the other. Yeah, fine. Yeah.
I would just swap him out. Say we'll give you him. We take De La Feu. And then get like Rakitic or something for the midfield.
Yeah, I think Zlatan's kind of a shoe-in. At this point, everyone's kind of expecting it almost. It's weird because just a couple days ago, I think I asked you guys, and I wasn't feeling as confident as the rumors were out making it out to be. But I don't know. I got that feeling now. I've talked about it a lot.
It's going like this, you know. Yeah, every day something, you know.
Oh,
you
telling the media. Whole thing. I thought you meant like me and my chair. Is like, sorry, I'm leaning forward and back. My bad. But yeah, as far as other signings, I know we're going for experienced players, but I don't think we're going to spend a whole lot of money. I think Ollie's right. If Suso goes, which I just don't foresee it unless we do change the formation. If Suso goes, then we might be able to get like a Rakitic or someone in the midfield, which is necessary. I would really like Demiral. I just think his price point is too high. But we do need to replace Musacchio. We need someone to partner up with Romagnoli who's going to be consistent, that we could count on, and hopefully not get injured immediately.
Suso's not leaving in the winter.
I agree. I completely agree.
If he leaves, it'll be a summer thing when we can play a preseason without him.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I don't think everything's happening, though. I don't think that there's a chance that that happens.
No.
Although it's weird because I think it's now the end of the season in Brazil. Is that right?
Correct.
So
yeah.
Weirdly,
this is about when we announced Paqueta, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So then Gremio might be more open to it than in the summer when it happens to be their mid-season. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to lose a player then, whereas that's obviously how we were able to get Paqueta when we were, and that was all tied up actually in December. I think he joined up.
I think we announced him in December, right?
Yeah. So there is perhaps potential there, but I think his price, given the season that he's had, is going to be quite off-putting for us, but we'll see.
But I think you're right. I think we're going to be under wraps, and the next signing that isn't Ibrahimovic, if we get him, it's going to be like a Adriano sort of deal, like where a player arrives in the airport, and we're all like, yo, where is he going? And then he just gets announced the next day, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't foresee a lot of leaks happening.
I've seen an interesting report today, and it was from Di Marzio, so, you know, used to be like 100% gospel truth, perhaps not as much like that anymore, but still a lot of people respect what comes out of his mouth. He says that Maldini and Boban are going after Alexis Sanchez-type deals, where we perhaps get players that are on the big-name players that are on the fringes of their current clubs, and we get them on a loan with, like, an option to buy. So it's
like
a low-risk investment.
Like Gareth Bale, I was about
to say.
We've
already got Gareth Bale.
I meant Teo Hernandez.
Yeah.
I mix those guys up all the time.
But it'd be interesting to see, you know, if we do go down that route, what kind of players we would be targeting. I like that formula because, I think it's low risk. As long as it's an option to buy and not an obligation, mm-hmm. it makes a lot of sense. You know, someone like a Rakitic who comes in on a six-month loan because he doesn't want to leave Barcelona permanently, but he wants to play. And we've got an option to buy him for like 25, 30 mil. If he plays well, he's going to be happy and he's going to want to stay anyway. If he's not good, then we send him back and we look for the next solution. Those are the perfect types of deals, really.
And that's where we saw most of our success under Berlusconi. You know, we kept getting like Brazilian Ronaldo. We got him towards the tail end of his career and he still obviously performed. I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head, of course, but there's multiple players. I know, terrible example, but there's multiple players that we would get that were like 30, 32, get them on the cheap that still had a few good years left in them to perform. And then we moved on. And I think
our last Champions League squad, our last Champions League winning squad, were all like 30 and over.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You don't win anything with kids. That's what they said, don't they? So a lot of the free agent signings towards the end of the Galliani era were very, very questionable. Don't get me wrong. Yes. But at the same time, I feel like everything just condensed in terms of the budget that we had to work with and everything. So it's natural in a way. But yeah, Zlatan, he's got to come in. I'm not adverse to selling. I'm assuming that we can just afford Zlatan outright and just we're paying his wages, essentially. I'm not adverse to selling Piontek and going for like a go-between forward, someone like Cavani. You know, I think his wages would be a problem.
Well, he's on the way out too.
I've seen his name mentioned. Mm-hmm. He got linked the other day. And if can you imagine that? Because Zlatan and Cavani played together. So
but they also didn't get along. Neither of them wanted the other year because they both wanted to be the superstar. But Cavani's used to it now with Neymar and Mbappe and everyone else taking a spot. So who knows?
What about Lucas Moura?
I like Lucas a lot, but I don't know if that's the type of player that's going to really elevate us.
I think he would tear Serie A up. I think he'd be really good.
I haven't spotted him since he was like 20.
Mm-hmm. Speedster.
But he's never.
Yeah, I think the Rakitic thing is going to come back. I think I've said this before. I can't remember if I said it on here or if I tweeted it. I've got this feeling that Inter are going to get someone like Vidal, and it's going to be quite a good signing. It might even take them, you know, dare I say it, to the Scudetto. And we're going to be lumped with someone like Rakitic. Not lumped with, because he would still improve our midfield without a doubt. But also at the same time, one deal could scupper the other. So like, if Vidal leaves, they're not going to want Rakitic to leave. And so it could be interesting to see how that works out.
I still think Modric is an idea in our back pocket. Like, in the event that Inter were to get Vidal and Rakitic is no longer available, why wouldn't we go for a free transfer on Modric? I mean, sell one player and we got the wages or whatever our transfer budget was. That's the wages right there for both him and Zlatan. And that's a fucking combo worth dying for right there. Granted, maybe that was 35 and 38 years old, yeah. But still, I mean, for where we're at now, like, that's the peak of what we could do for this season.
Center back is an interesting one, because I know you're a fan of the idea of signing Demiral. It does fit with this idea that we have of signing young players with high potential, that kind of thing that Elliot wanted to do. I don't like anything more than 30 mil for him. And I don't think Juve take any less than that, so I think we're going to end up walking away from that. I just hope that we don't then turn to Rugani, because I don't think he offers a massive upgrade on anything that we currently have, whereas at least there's some promising signs from Demiral. So, you know, let's say that push comes to shove. I'm saying it again, someone like Jerome Boateng would be great. Again, six-month loan. Yeah, six-month loan, or if we can sign Thiago Silva, because obviously there wouldn't be a fee involved, then you're looking at an 18-month deal, and he's still got it. Apparently, a lot of people that I speak to who watch
Thiago
PSG.
And Ibra, come back.
Thiago, Ibra, and Modric. Three Milan boys.
Our entire, like, little voodoo against us is over.
That would be like everything in football coming full circle.
Yeah.
But it'd be great because we couldn't announce Thiago Silva, because obviously it'd be December, so we'd have to announce. It would have been great to announce him as a double signing, but right.
Thiago could say the only reason I agreed to come back is because Latin told me he could.
That would be fantastic, though, to be fair. That would be a complete role reversal.
I'd love it.
You realize just the fashion that they left in was such a joke.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Neither of them
that
wanted
was the beginning
to
of the end.
It was.
It was all about the money.
Suso signing Raiola right now, that's only helping us, you know? As much as no one likes Raiola, I think that's beneficial to us right now. More Raiola clients means we could lump deals together. I think it's going to ease things over with Zlatan. Maybe, you know, give him more and someone else gets less, or vice versa, or they all get a level amount across the board. Like I say, we got like $40 million for a 5-year contract between the four of them. Iron it out how you want. You know, figure something out. Yeah, I just made that number up. It's just
I don't know.
$10 million a year.
Yeah. But, you know what I'm saying? Just like, they could piece together, and then we don't have to worry about Raiola and a million different agents getting millions in fees. It would just be a lump sum. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to help us more than when we had the Chinese and we kind of said, Raiola, go kick at the bucket or whatever. I can't think of a phrase for that, but...
I've seen a few people refer to it as...
That's what I was trying to say.
Kick rocks. Yeah, I've seen a few people refer to it as like the Raiola axis at the moment because obviously he fell out with Mirabelli and Fasoni, which is understandable because Mirabelli can't keep his fucking mouth shut. And neither can Raiola, so they're two quite abrasive personalities. But for whatever reason, he seems to get along with Boban and Maldini. And obviously, he's got Donnarumma already, got Bonaventure. He's now got Romagnoli and Suso as his clients. So he's basically taking over the core of the Milan squad at the moment. Or what you might consider to be a few of our more important players. And then we're in negotiations, obviously, over Ibrahimovic. And then what does he do? He offers one of his clients, Moise Kean, who only left 6 months ago. He offers him to us. Okay, he's probably not of interest to us at the moment. I imagine the conversation went something like, oh, you can have Moise Kean. It's like, no, we've already got Rafael Leao. We're probably going to stick with him. But that doesn't mean that other of his clients aren't going to be offered to us down the line. Yes. And if we get first refusal on some of those names, then it can't be a bad thing, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it makes it easier for Raiola even. You know, keep all of his eggs in one basket, and it helps him.
Yeah, when we get relegated, it's probably going to be quite bad for him having to arrange all those moves away.
Well, relegated is going to be really bad for us. Then everyone's gone, and we're relegated.
Except for Donnarumma. He's going to stay.
God, I can see it.
Lazari's gonna...
Speaking of Donnarumma, though, during the Parma game, Matty, you touched on a little bit, you know, when he came up big and a few of those occasions, even that offside one, you really saw some leadership qualities from him, the way he kind of took charge of that and yelled at everyone else and put them in their place. Do you see a captaincy in the near future for him?
I think Romagnoli is going to leave at some point, and the captaincy is going to go to Donnarumma.
I'm thinking so. I'm starting to see the seats.
Sometimes I watch Alessio Romagnoli and I think, yeah, he could potentially go on to bigger and better things than us. I say bigger and better as in assuming we don't qualify for the Champions League, he's going to look to reach that level. But what kind of clubs are going to be sniffing around him? And then I see a game like the one that he had against Parma and I think, oh, we're in serious trouble. If a if a scout from an elite club, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid were linked in the last week, if one of their scouts was there to watch that, they're probably thinking, yeah, this is our guy. And
yeah, but
that
he's
worries
so
me a
up and
bit.
Down. I feel like in
that's
big
what
teams,
I mean.
He isn't necessarily a big player.
The other thing, Italians, for whatever reason, they tend to struggle abroad, or they just don't leave Italy much, you know?
That's why I don't think that Donnarumma is going to leave. I feel like goalkeepers are like extra sensitive.
He cried. Yeah. Cried in the dressing room when people were booing his name.
Yeah, I was going to say, we literally abused him. Like,
still think that's disgusting. Him.
Yeah, I wasn't fond of that. I thought the Donnarumma stuff was pretty funny, but I didn't like seeing the effect. I thought
I'm pretty sure I chanted Donnarumma in Chicago when he was here.
The problem with that was the way that it was handled in the media, yep, and that Donnarumma had plenty of opportunity to come out and make his intentions clear, but instead he chose for Raiola to keep being it. He was a kid. He wasn't
17.
Even 17. Yeah.
It took his parents to get involved.
Which to me suggests that there was some almost institutional bullying going on Raiola's part there.
Absolutely.
He was just the mouthpiece for everything. He was coming out. Apparently he was the one who tweeted off, you know, the social media account saying Raiola, ex Donnarumma, whatever it was. So that was kind of mental. But yeah, I think Donnarumma could definitely potentially be a captain. And the one standout thing that's come out about him was when we really struggled at the start of the season and Boban did that big interview and he said, oh, I looked around the dressing room and the one leader that I see was Donnarumma. And everyone was like, wow, that's, you know, the big statement considering how everything's going, that he didn't say the captain or he didn't choose any of the senior figures. It's almost as if he was subliminally saying the only one who gives a shit is Donnarumma. You know, he was the one who was leading by example. And that's what it's all about. It's leadership in terms of being vocal and trying to organise, which is obviously handy if you're a goalkeeper, you can see everything out in front of you. I think it does work quite well. But also leading by example in terms of performances. It doesn't matter if you're 35 or you're 18. You know, if you're the best player on the pitch, people are going to look up to you. So I would like to see it. It would be a nice success story without a doubt. But for the time being, I would like Romagnoli to stay, build on what we've seen, and we need to get him a consistent partner. And then I think we're looking pretty solid in the back four. And then you move forward, I guess. That's it, though. Any closing thoughts?
I did hear that they're doing a reboot of The Lord of the Rings, and Gimli was cast by ours truly, Madison.
The Gimli Show, that's the title of this one.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, Maddie. It came to me earlier, and I was like, I'm going to drop that in there.
Tune in next week when we're live from Isengard.
Do you always carry around a pot of gold, or...
You're the leprechaun here.
I don't think so.
For those wondering, Madison and I are the same height, so it's not even a good insult on my part, but...
I'm 6'3", but can't grow a decent beard, so...
Yeah, there's
that. I guess neither can AJ.
just shaved my today, I swear. I mean, I can't grow a full beard like you, but at least you could tell I have one.
And Maddie, will Everton have a new manager, do you think, next time?
I think they'll be in a new league next year.
I was just saying, next time we record, if it's next year, then something's gone horribly wrong, but...
I don't know, only because two games this week, or three games in the span of 7 days, you don't want to replace a manager with that, unless it's Duncan Ferguson.
Oof, big Dunk Ferguson. He's a real man. He won't take any shit, will he?
I don't know. He could be part of the problem as well.
Yeah, possibly. I really don't know who you end up getting, to be honest.
I don't think anyone wants that job.
It scares me a little bit. Yeah, it's poison chalice. It's like West Ham job every time. They spend a load of money, manager comes in, a lot's expected of them. Yeah, you're right. You're a smaller club than West Ham, to be fair, and they are actually in the top half.
West
you don't Ham, deserve,
I
you
think
don't
they're in the bottom three, aren't they?
No.
West Ham
won at Chelsea, and they went 3 points behind Burnley, who were in eighth or something.
I thought they were in the bottom three.
Yeah.
Well.
You don't deserve to be compared to West Ham. And on that note, thank you very much for joining us, everyone. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. And also, like I said, I bought the 120th anniversary shirt. I have no idea if they're going to send it out straight away or if they're going to wait until like early December, like a week's time just before the game, whenever to send it out. But what I'll do next episode, if it's arrived, I'll do like a live unboxing or something. Then you can all see how it comes. And in the meantime, being joined by Anthony Togrud.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I got a hunch that those jerseys are all going to try and arrive right on the 15th of December. So, you know, maybe then. But regardless, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You can find me on Twitter at Togrud45. And, of course, Madison, you can sign us off.
Yeah, I'm so excited to watch you open up that 189-euro box that you bought. I don't know. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Madison.
Good one.
Was that meant to be a dig? Like, oh, yeah, you can afford 190 euros.
I was trying to think of something else, but I couldn't.
Nah, you're right. It's probably a bit excessive, but like I said, panic bought it, thought these are going to be sold out the moment I refresh the page. So I'll buy it. And, you know, if I really, really don't like it when it arrives, it's probably got some resale value. But whatever. Hopefully unbox that next week if it's arrived. If not, it'll be the week after. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening, everybody. And we will catch you in a week's time. Goodbye.
Abate la rimette dentro. Esce Radu. Porta vuota. Goal! Goal! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava...